Blog Talk Radio.
Well, greetings and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This program is focused on a personal situation. It's something that happens to a lot of people in the course of their life. Something like 10,000 people a year, it's said, that have problems with paralysis. Paralysis, well, you know, what is it? Basically, according to the Wikipedia, paralysis is most often caused by damage to the nervous system or the brain. It's especially the spinal cord. Partial paralysis can also occur in the REM, the mind stage of sleep. Major causes are stroke, trauma, and accidents. Many other things can contribute to it as well. There are certainly poisons that interfere with the nerve function as well as other medical issues. But what we're going to talk about in the next half hour is the trauma that follows an automobile accident. I'm joined on the line by Judy Clark. Judy is my sister. Judy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi.
Welcome once again. Last week we started this little conversation because I know statistically there are a lot of people who are injured, that are paralyzed in automobile accidents. That's how it happened to you, is it not?
Yes.
Tell people who will be listening for the first time just your story, a little bit of it.
Okay. Yes, I gave blood at the hospital on July 18, 2000, and about 15 minutes away from the hospital, I fainted at the wheel, and between the airbag and the guardrail that I hit, I broke my neck, C6-7 injury, had the tracheostomy, and for I think it was 2 weeks I was in a coma in intensive care and was in the hospital that I had just donated blood to. I was there for 2 months in intensive care and then transferred to a rehabilitation facility called Kessler, which is in West Orange. Again, I was from New Jersey. I'm in Florida now. And that's it.
Well, and that sums it up. Certainly, when you can do it in 30 seconds or so, you know, it's like, wow, all the anguish that has gone on beyond that time. Certainly, it changes. It changed your life, but it changes the life of other people, doesn't it? The family and the friends. I mean, that's a tough part to deal with, isn't it?
You see how close your family actually is, and you see who your true friends are also.
Well, certainly the friends, I mean, the family, in many situations, they're not always there either. But, you know, in this situation, you've had a supportive family as much as I guess anybody does. But the sheer impact of it drives away other friends, doesn't it?
Yes, it sure does. Because if you look at the person differently, they're not quite the same. They're not walking anymore. In my case, my hands don't work. My arms do. But I can't cut meat. I can't pick up things real easy. I certainly can't reach for things because I can't stand up to get them off a counter. So I can't do wash and a lot of little chores that you normally could do. So I certainly depend on people to help me.
Well, and that, I guess, really does bring us to the topic that we wanted to touch on today, and that's how do you find people that help you? How good are they? You know, what have you encountered over the last 8 years has it been?
Yes, it's been 8 years this year. And as far as the hired help, when I first got hurt, I needed pretty much 24-hour care. So through an agency, and then I eventually had somebody live in with me. And as I started to get better, going off the trach and getting a little bit of more rationally, you know, that I could rationalize what I wanted, I did not choose to have somebody living in with me. So I chose the other route of running an ad in the paper and doing a background check on the people and, you know, checking references. I did all that myself because this person was going to be coming in the morning to help me get up, get dressed, and do the chores that I needed done so they would come for a couple hours in the morning. And in the evening, probably come 2 or 3 hours. And again, I paid for this because this is called custodial care. I had to pay for this out of my pocket because insurance doesn't cover that, only if it was, as they say, the word medically necessary. If I was on the ventilator, they would have covered for a nurse to come once a day, but not for all the work that I needed. So I had to pay for that myself.
So the people that come, that you do get, if you run an ad in the paper, I mean, I guess it was the same sequence, whether it was in New Jersey or it's in Florida, you run an ad in the paper, what are you looking for?
Oh, and I actually put it down specific. Of course, I've been doing this now for myself 6 years, so I've perfected it. I try to put briefly what I'm looking for, female preferred, for quadriplegic, for an hour. Now it's an hour in the morning, hour at night, and the people can get my housework done. I just have organized people that I've been able to employ here. They have a list of things that need to be done on the shift that they come in. And I do a background check, and the police in Port Orange do help me do this background check, which is wonderful to let me know if there's anything on there. And then they have, and I also have cameras in my house, because you certainly need to protect yourself, especially if you're living alone. And they have actually become my friends instead of just workers. I do pay them for the hours and the time that they're here, but they actually have become my friends, and I think that is the best way to be able to keep people here, not treating them like, not like an employee, but more like somebody who's certainly offering the services to me that I couldn't get out of bed if they didn't show up. And I certainly couldn't have the house. We've got a drag strip going here in front of my house. And we have, again, at night, and helping me with the shower. So all the personal things would never be done, and my house looking as nice as it does, if I didn't have the people and make it kind of nice for them to be here.
The criteria that you use when you run an ad in the paper, are you thinking of somebody that has a medical training or an interest in that, or is it physical therapy, or is it just anybody?
I thank God I will be able to say that I'm not in a bad medical state. I can't stand up and I can't use my hands, but physically I'm in excellent health, and that is wonderful, especially with this kind of spinal cord injury. So I'm glad to say mentally and physically I am in a good shape. So I need somebody who has an interest, because it's very important. You have to have the personal touch to know if you're not in Monday, Wednesday, Friday, if that's your days, and you don't show up, I'm not getting out of bed. So somebody basically with a real good heart and interest, and they know what I'm paying. I go through the whole thing on the phone with them, set up the interview, and you pretty much get a gut feeling of somebody you'd like to work with. And then I always have them write on my application form a little bit about themselves and why would they answer an ad like that. So I can certainly weed out people who are just looking to make money and really don't care about that, personal things to make my life more pleasant. Of course, you don't have to call them back. But people who seem to be sincere, and a lot of people who are nursing students, are in the nursing field or help their parents, certainly have that kind of genuine interest in helping somebody like myself.
Now, you are employed. You have a full-time job.
Yes.
Assuming that somebody's there in the morning to get you up, what's your day like?
Oh, okay. It's just 8:30 to 5. I get, even with my fingers not working, I put pegs. I get this, again, through disability organization that helped me actually about 6 years ago so that I could get back in the workforce, because I didn't know how I was ever going to type if your fingers don't work. So they have these little pegs that go on the side of my hand, and I can do the keyboard. Anyway, so what I do is I do data entry. It's for patient financial services, actually verifying and loading medical benefits for people on dialysis. It's a big operation. It has probably like 100 people doing different parts of the, you know, like Medicare and the commercial claims, and I load the benefits with 8 other people that are on my team. So, and sometimes we have to call the insurance companies, and I have a headset, but I can hold the phone. Again, I've tried all these different things. The headset is the best, but I can pick up the phone and hold it, even though I can't get a grip on it. You know, I can get it, you know, up to my ear, but it's basically loading the benefits all day, and then I go to the gym 2 or 3 times a week at the YMCA. They have 2 or 3 pieces of equipment. That's all I can use. And I can, in my wheelchair, because I can't get out of it, stay right in there. And someone at the gym actually assists me, puts the little cups on my arms. So if I don't go to the gym, I just come home, fix myself a little TV dinner, and watch a little TV, and, of course, then get on the phone, because I love talking to everybody.
The fact that you're doing medical work right now that connects to your before and after the accident work life, basically. Before that, you were in, you managed medical offices. Is that what you did?
Right. For 25 years, I used to be an office manager for medical practices. Yes.
And what does that entail when you manage, what did you do in that job?
Oh, as the office manager, yeah. A little bit of everything. Hiring the employees, of course, if they weren't performing, had to dismiss them. I did the reviews, did the posting of payments, did the appeals to the insurance company. Any problems, the last practice was an OBGYN. So if it mostly was happy situations, but if a patient was unhappy, I had to diffuse that, take care of that. So mainly the accounts payable, the accounts receivable, the employees, making sure the patients were happy. And I loved it. I loved having a variety of a lot of different things.
But it's pretty much a management of making sure that other people did their job properly. It wasn't that you had to physically do all that, right?
Oh, no. There were like 8 girls that I made, just like I hire my people now. I didn't make them feel like that they were under me. They worked together with me because I certainly couldn't do 8 people's position. Mm. So, again, reassuring them how valuable they were for the practice, and if there was a problem, nip it right away before grew into something that they would pick up and quit. And then we were starting all over again, hiring somebody, and that takes like a month to fill that kind of position, you know, most of those positions. So we had fun, and we get the work done, and the doctors loved me, and it just felt like part of my family. They were wonderful.
And then the accident, and you come out of there, and people don't think you can do that job anymore. Is that true?
Well, I certainly could not. I couldn't drive.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have my power wheelchair. I'd have no way of getting there, and certainly mentally, I was not ready to go to any position. So it took like a year until I was able to drive and had my confidence. That's probably more than half the battle, getting your confidence that I can do it, even with this kind of disability. And I pursued it. I started looking in the paper and calling, and then I made a contact of somebody who used to work at the hospital up in New Jersey, actually where I had the accident at Morristown Memorial, and let her know of what happened. She didn't even know I had the accident, and told her I was ready to back to work. So she put me in touch with somebody who had me come in for an interview, told her what I can do versus what I can't do, and they hired me the same day I came in. So, and I was there 3 years before moving to Florida. So it works if you're confident and you can do the job.
Well, I would guess from what you're saying then, certainly there, it's a physical injury, the paralysis, but it's mental as well. If you can't overcome that mentally, you're really going to have some serious problems.
Right, because most people in this situation feel that they can't do it. And I've talked to many, many people that say it's just easier to stay home and have the Social Security check, but I'm only 55 and I'm not ready to retire yet, and if I can still put something back into the society and feel good about myself, I think that keeps me stronger and certainly mentally keeps my brain going. Rather than sitting watching a TV or talking all day on the phone, I lose all my friends that way.
Well, one of the since your accident, I think it was since your accident, Christopher Reeve had his fall from the horse. Was that after or was that before?
That was before.
Okay, so he was injured prior to.
Right.
And then you are what's referred to as a 6'7". What is that? That is the
cervical. It's a C6-7, as they say, and then you know down the spine. That's you know close to like the brain.
Okay, so there's a one position right up by the skull.
Yes, and then 2, 3, 4, 5. It just goes straight down the thoracic, and anybody would look at you know a diagram. It shows if you go down further, of course, past the middle of the spine, then it. People are more likely to be a paraplegic and then instead of the quad. So I just got in there enough that my arms move, and I can feel in my hands, but the fingers don't move.
Well, certainly organizations down here in the Miami area where I am, it's the Miami Project to Cure Paralysis, and that was started by the Bonacani family because Mark was injured as a football player. Christopher and Dana Reeve started the foundation. They call it the Paralysis Resource Center, or in their foundation, they have a Paralysis Resource Center that promotes the health and well-being of people living with a spinal cord injury. They also have embraced the mobility impairment and paralysis by providing comprehensive information. I'm looking at the website right now, and it has a number of things that are available, including a 336-page book that deals with paralysis. They call it the Paralysis Resource Guide. When you had your injury, was information easy to come by?
No, because I didn't know where to start. And I certainly couldn't use the computer in the beginning, I didn't have that little peg even, and I was living alone. My daughter was staying with me, helping me, but she was working full time and had a little one that she had to care for. So I really, most of the day, was by myself, and I looked at the computer but never turned it on. I couldn't do anything once it would go on because I couldn't use the keyboard. So I didn't know, and without traveling out of the house, I didn't know anybody else who ever had an injury like this. So where do you start? And I did start going to Kessler and did have a local transportation that would pick me up. It would take twice as long to get me there because, of course, it was hard to strap the chair down and everything. But I started going back to the Kessler Rehabilitation, and, of course, they had people there. And if you have the interest, you find out who you can contact. And it took a while for me, even though I was kind of motivated. It took me probably 6 months to find a lot of the things that I had questions on. And they did certainly help me.
You know, Judy, as I'm talking to you right now, because this is a new process that we're using, I just looked on the board, and even though we're talking, I don't see your phone number or my phone number on the switchboard. So I'm really not sure whether or not it's being recorded. So what I'd like you to do is just hold on for a second,
okay.
And you stay on there. And I tell you what, why don't you call that number back? Let's hang up. And I'm
okay.
going to dial in, and we'll just pick this up again and see what happens.
Okay, very good. Talk
okay.
to you in a minute. Bye.
Okay. This is Ken English. You're joining us in the process of a program called, right now, it's called Ask Judy. It's focused on the issue of life after an accident that created paralysis in my sister, and we've been talking a little bit about that. The phone, I think, did disconnect, so I'm not sure whether we got too much of the first part, so we'll just pick it up from this point, Judy.
Okay.
Welcome back to the show. This is Judy Clark, and what we were talking about, Judy, is the help issue. You know, so why don't we recap that a little bit, how difficult it is for somebody that's that has your situation to find qualified help?
Hard. It's certainly not easy. I may run an ad for 3 weeks before I get a couple of qualified people for what I'm looking for. And medically, I don't really need anybody that can do any vent, you know, like any vents or anything like that. I physically am in good shape. I need somebody who can just get me up. I have a few things that have to be done. Get me up, get dressed, and transfer me into a power wheelchair. And then do the little domestic things like doing the laundry and get my lunch together and just whatever chores need to be done each of the days. And in the evening, I need somebody who can assist me, again, transfer him out of the power chair and into a shower chair so that I can have a shower and any of my other personal needs that need to be done. So I can't do any of that without someone here. So if somebody quits and I have no one, I may be in the chair all night until I get somebody, but I have now back up people that if I knew somebody wasn't coming or they had a problem with the family or their car or ended up quitting without any notice, I've already backed up that. They don't get the last 2 weeks of pay, and I would have two or three people as backup people that if at a moment's notice and they're around, they would come and help me at least get in or out of bed. So it's just you got to find the personality you want to deal with, somebody that you're hoping is going to stay with you more than a month or two because just want to get the routine. If they quit, then back to training, which nobody likes to start. Training a new person, whether it's at a other kind of job or this personal kind of job. So it's good when you find somebody good, and it's great to try to keep them.
Well, it certainly is. And you know, the fact that you are persevering and pushing on is certainly a tribute to your own motivation, your own ability to keep going. We're just coming to the end of 30 minutes. It's pretty amazing how fast time goes.
Sure does.
Just in conclusion, if somebody is interested, they listen to this later on, and we're going to set up more of a formal format for this because I think it's a good idea. But if they wanted to email you, could they do that?
Sure.
And that is what?
Oh, E, then a Z, G-O-I-N. It's easy going. That's me. E-Z-G-O-I-N 6707 at yahoo.com.
All right. Well, Judy, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy your day in the sunshine. And
I'll
talk with you soon.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Ken English. You've been listening to Ask Judy about paralysis, life after an accident. We'll be talking with her again next week. Check it out online at blogtalkradio.com. This is Ken English.